do what we could do. We're holding a challah at the very end. We'll make a seam today, Bez Hashem. There's the cookies fresh out of the oven in eager anticipation. Okay, so we're holding in chal and challah, Perek Dalet Mishnah Ches. Okay, Bez Hashem. So, let me speak this one outside first. I think it'll be faster. A lot of words in this Mishnah. We said it before, actually, that there are three different regions in terms of the halachas of challah. There's Eretz Yisrael proper, which has the chiyuv challah of the raisa. We keep on saying the chiyuv kicks in where you make the dough. Then there's a second area, which was Eretz Yisrael in Bayis Rishon time when Yeshua came, but then when they came back a second time with Ezra, they didn't capture as large a territory. So there's Eretz Yisrael that really isn't Eretz Yisrael anymore in Bayis Sheni's time, but sure seems a lot like Eretz Yisrael, and has like it's like Eretz Yisrael Midrabanan, they treat it as Eretz Yisrael B'Olam Midrabanan. And then there's a third, and we've seen it many times before, that's like, we've seen this region before. Chziv, that's the borderline, everything we see, Chziv, that's the issue there. And then there's the regions outside of Eretz Yisrael. Okay, now, the din is like this. If you're in Eretz Yisrael, you give challah to Kohen, end of story, 124th, for private people, 148th, if it's for sale. And the Kohen has to be the kind of Kohen who would be trustworthy enough to eat it b'tahara. And the standard is set fairly high, yet they essentially be a Kohen who, the machlokus we're going to see in the Mishnayos, either a Kohen who's really medaktik in all mitzvahs, or the category is a Kohen who eats his chulin b'tahara. He eats his non-truma food, even in tahara, like the same way you need to keep truma and challah. We'll see that more inside. But whatever the standard is, so that's for challah that comes from Eretz Yisrael. Then there's challah that comes from this middle region, the region that was once part of Eretz Yisrael in the first temple period time under Joshua and so, but not under Israel in the second temple period time under Ezra at all. So that place is, we call it, it's Eretz Yisrael, but only rabbinically Eretz Yisrael, and therefore you'll take truma twice. What's the idea? We told this yesterday a little bit. The idea was that you have to take challah because the rabbi said it's like Israel rabbinically. We're pretending it's Israel because it's on the border there and it was formerly Israel. So you're going to take, rabbinically you're going to take challah. But that challah, of course, is outside of Israel and therefore it's tameh, because we said the land outside of Israel automatically become tameh. And therefore you won't be able to, a Kohen can't eat that, it'll have to be burned. But they were afraid, if everyone was burning their challah, no one will ever remember to give the challah to a Kohen. So then they said give a second challah to a Kohen. Okay? I'm speaking all outside first. So it'll come out then, the first challah you take is the normal challah, so you'll take a 24th of your dough and burn that, and then you'll have another token amount that you give to the Kohen. As well. Fine. Then there's a third category, which is...
You
can eat it. Eat it. And we'll see. It's very lenient. You'll see inside. Yeah, it's very lenient. We'll see inside. It's very lenient. Okay? You're going to give to him any amount, actually, I think. Any token amount. Then there's a third area, which is outside of Israel, the main, like, you know, in London, whatever it is. So there, as the rabbis had it, in the Mishnahic times, so you're going to give two challahs again, but here, the same reason. The first will take some challah off, so challah shouldn't be forgotten. But now, since that's only a rabbinic invention, so people shouldn't forget challah, they let you take even the littlest amount, the de minimis amount, to burn, so you don't forget there's such thing as hafresh challah. Remember, midoraisa from the Torah, any amount of challah will do. Then you have to give a second challah, so you shouldn't forget the kohanim. That, since the kohen will really eat it, and we'll see the halachas is lenient, very lenient. Since the kohen will eat it, you should give now the normal amount, okay, which will be a 24th. Okay. That's the story in a nutshell, the background of the Mishnah. So we'll now see it inside here, some details. It says Rabban Gamliel Omer. This is Perek Dalet Mishnah Ches. Rabban Gamliel Omer. Shalosh aratos l'challah. There are three regions when it comes to challah. Meretz Yisrael va'ad Kziv, the land of Israel up to Kziv, which is somewhere near Akko. It's a bit of a machlokas where it is exactly. Somewhere it's Achziv, which is in part of Israel today. It's also a bit of a question, you'll see in a second, if it's a northern border or if it's actually, believe it or not, a western border. Correct. A western border. And it could be that because if it's to the east of Akko, really, that we're talking about the western coastline of the Levant, like, you know, up northern Israel and into Lebanon, is not part of Israel. In any case, wherever it is, It's a machlokes. Every single parish has a slightly different take because they didn't draw maps properly. It's beyond the scope of this shir, but the principle is that was Israel in the time of Joshua and wasn't Israel in the time of Ezra. That's the point in the Second Temple period. So if it's within Israel proper, the Israel that was both in the First and Second Temple period, so therefore it's this challah achas is one challah. The normal challah din will apply, the Torah obligation of challah. Mikziv v'adha na'ar v'adha amana, from Kziv, that place up north, either a northern border of Israel or a western border of Israel, until the Nahar, until the river. What that river is, again, their opinions. Either it's either a river in different opinions. It's either a river in Syria or a river in Lebanon. Okay, we've lost, we don't know which. Va'ad Amana, until a place called Amana. Where's Amana? Also, don't know where that is anymore. Could be as far, some Shitas have it as far to the east as Antioch, which is basically, you know what he called it? Turkey. Just far, right? Anatolia, and some people have as near as Beirut. Okay, so whatever that region was, that was once part of Israel, but is no longer. So then you have shtei chalos, you have two chalos you give. Achas la'ur, one goes to the fire. That's the first chala, that's a real bona fide chala, but only chala midurabanan. The rabbis had to take it. V'achas la'kohen, and the second one you give to the kohen. So you should remember the mitzvah of chala. And then shal'ur, the one that goes into the fire, yesh la'shir, has to have the normal amount, a 24th. V'shal, I was reading this out here. Yeah, right. And Vishal Kohen, and the one that you give to the Kohen, Ein Lashir, can be any amount. There's no required minimum amount. Just to remember that the Kohen gets something. As opposed to Min HaNar or Min HaMana Ulifnim, from that river and Amana, that city, and Lifnim. Since Lifnim would usually imply to the west, that's why some learn that Kziv must be. But anyways, wherever it is. The point is, it was never part of Israel. Shtei chalos, again, you give two chalot twice, take two pieces from the dough. Achas the ur, one goes to the fire, v'achas the kohen, one goes to the kohen. But here, since this is only rabbinically made up, totally, and there's no real basis for it, except that you shouldn't forget, they switched around. Since shel ur ein lashur, take any little amounts and put it in the fire, because that'll remember, oh, there's chalot to be taken when we get back to Israel. But it don't need to waste your bread. Vishal Kohen, and the part that the Kohen's going to eat, there will be, let that be the bigger one, because let it not go to waste, the Kohen's going to eat it. Yesh Leshiur, that will have the full 124th. Fine. Now there's missing words of the Mishnah. That's what I gave you, Hakdama. Now there's more. Now the words say, Tavul Yom Ochla. A Tavul Yom, that means a Kohen who went to the mikvah on that day, could eat it. What's it talking about? Okay. So we've got a big leniency here. In Chutzlar, you only need to give one Chala if you have a Kohen to give it to. And a Kohen to give it to is any Kohen, since remember this is a rabbinic convention, there's no real challah here, there's no real obligations to keep it tahor from the Torah. So the rabbis are super lenient, and you'll see there's lots of leniencies, but first of all, leniency about who can eat it, which Kohen is eligible. Essentially, any Kohen who didn't become tameh from a source of tumah that came from within him, essentially boils down to being a Zav or a Baal Keri, essentially, right? So then, unless he had that kind of a mission come out of him, he's allowed to eat this truma. Even if it's a tamei mace, for example, he's allowed to eat it, this challah. Because it's not challah, it's just pretend challah. We're very lenient. The rabbis only made a sort of a distinguishing feature, just so you shouldn't forget there's some restriction on this stuff. And therefore, if a Kohen is a Baal Keri, meaning he had a seminal emission, then he can't eat it, unless he went to the mikvah that day. If he went to the mikvah that day, so even though he's called Tavul Yom, normally Tavul Yom is like a Shein Latuma, second degree Tuma status, and couldn't touch Chala and eat it, but here we're lenient. So that boils down to the only person who can't eat the Chala, a man-wise, anyways, for a Kohen, is going to be a Zav, or a Baal Keri that didn't go to the mikvah. Okay, Zav, Tavul Yom won't help you. Because it's a 7-day situation. So, but on the last day, even on the last day, if I remember correctly, even on the last day won't help you because they said Zav is strict. Zav is stricter. It's like the Zav is a bad news. It's a very strong form of tumor. And also, it'll become for the women also. The women mean the wives of the Kohanim. They can't eat if they're Zavos, right? They have bleeding, intercycle bleeding, uterine blood. That's a Zava. And a Yoledes. A Yoledes is the one who had a baby. So the din is, this is a little interesting. So the din is that a woman, when she has a baby, she's tamei no matter what, for the first 7 days if it's a boy, and 14 days if it's a girl. And then she's tahora from the Torah, from the, if it's a boy, for the next 33 days, meaning days 8 to 40, and for a girl, for the next 66 days, right, from the day 15 to day 80. Right, that's the Torah, that's Pesukim. But the rabbi said that a woman who is a Yoledes, even though, because she, here's the point, just to paint the picture for you, as long as a woman stops bleeding for an instant, she stops bleeding coming out of her, so then she can go to the mikveh and be tahara. Even if she resumes bleeding, that's the amazing. So that's that. In other words, if on day 15 after the birth, if a woman's still bleeding, that blood is not considered to be blood that's metama her. As long as she has a brief hefsek, that's all she needs. But the rabbi said she's still she's like considered like a tful yom or refa. She's like one long tful yom, so she shouldn't be able to eat. She wouldn't be able to eat from truma and kachem, even though she's tahora. So those women, again, women that have, just like men who have the tumah coming out of them proper, they're not allowed to eat from this rabbinic challah. So much going on. So anyway, the Mishnah says inside, those words are missing. All it says is tvul yom ochla, a tvul yom could eat it, meaning either someone who didn't become tummy from their body, or even someone who was a balkari who then becomes the mikvah, and tvul yom, they could eat it. And Rabbi Yossi Omer, Einot tzarach tevila. Rabbi Yossi says, you don't even need tevila. He says, this whole thing is a rabbinic invention, and like, okay, so we're not going to forget truma, but like, why did you make this arbitrary line? If you're a tummy from your own, from a mayan, a source inside of you, all of a sudden you can't, forget it, no problem. And he even permits, the yoledes, the zav, the zavan, and the zav, and the balkari, everyone can eat, not a problem. However, the rabbis say, va'asura, the rabbis, the chum, is the din, they say asur lazavim lazavos. They say azav, that's a man, and azava, that's a woman. Anida, I didn't mention Nida, sorry. Anida, that's just a woman who's regularly menstruating. And a yoldos, and also a woman who gave birth. Those people, they can't eat, because they have source of tumah out of them. Fine. Now, more leniencies from this chala. V'ne'acheles im hazar ala shulchan. The Kohen, you're sitting there in wherever you're sitting, in Italy, and you're giving your thing to your call to the Kohen. So normally in Eretz Yisrael, a Kohen can eat the same table as a regular Yisrael.
Cannot
eat, because we're afraid their food's going to get mixed up. It's bad news, right? So you can't have truma or challah at the table with non Kohanim. Remember, we're talking misa b'day shemayim. So this is like how you wouldn't eat with someone having sinai at your table. You wouldn't sit at the table with them. So this is bad news. However, we're lenient when it comes to this challah and chutz la'aretz, because it's just so to speak, an imaginary challah, pretend a challah, so you don't forget the mitzvah of challah. And v'nitenes l'kol kohen, and you can give the challah gift to any kohen you want. Now, what does any kohen you want mean? L'kol kohen. So there's a machlokas here between the Bar Tanur and the Rambam and Tosfos. Like the Bar Tanur on one side and Rambam on the other side, and Tosfos with him. Interestingly, and this will play into the next mishnah, so we have to keep it straight here. Either the pshat is L'chol Kohen, any Kohen means a Kohen, even a Kohen who isn't careful to eat his chulin, his non-truma challah stuff, but tahara. Usually if a Kohen is not careful to eat in tahara and purity, even when he's eating non-challah, non-truma, even of course it's permissible to eat regular food when you're tameh, but we're afraid if a Kohen does that, then he'll come to mix up and eat he'll come to be matama, the truma and the challah. So we restrict them. So one malach, one approach is, we're not restricting such a person. In other words, what's the big deal already? So the guy is not strict about eating everything but tahara. This isn't chal anyways. The other approach is that any kohen, even if he's not strict in mitzvah observance, and we don't care. That's the kohen who's just in general not a particularly observant person. So what? He's a kohen. He's eligible. there's a machlokas which kind of kohen you can give it to. Bizman is there, of course, we only give one challah. We're basically essentially relying on like these leniencies and others. Like the whole thing just fell away. The whole thing fell away. The Tanakhama.
That's
the Rabban. And that is the Rabban.
That's the din.
Even tefillah you don't need. So it's not a chasurim mester, but it's almost missing words. Tevul yom means anybody, even a tamei meis, and even a balkari, as long as he's tevul yom. Like those words are missing out of the Mishnah, so to speak. And Rabbi Yossi says, even more leading than that, even forget the Tfuliyon business, forget the mikvah altogether. Bartanura? Bartanura is a very, very, very late Rishon. Yeah, very late Rishon. Yeah, yeah. They should know the Bartanura heavily relied upon the Rush. The Rush, who's Rav Shimshon Mishon's sons, who's one of the Balei Tosfos, he's his heaviest draw, and then the Rambam and the Rush. But he bottom line, yeah, he can argue. Yeah. Okay? Yeah, fine. Good. Okay, so now, Mishates. Brace yourself. So, once we're talking about gifts to give to the Kohanim, that you can give to any Kohen. So now we're going to say, oh, there's other things you can give to any Kohen. Now remember, what any Kohen means, either is a Kohen that doesn't eat Batahara, or a Kohen that, just any Kohen. End of story, even if he's not particular about mitzvahs. Like that's the Bartanura's approach.
This Mishnah fits into Parshat Korach.
That's right, the end of Parshas Koch, that's exactly right. So these are the gifts. So in other words, bottom line, I'll summarize it for you. You can give L'chol Kohen, any Kohen, any of the gifts the Kohanim get, except for Chala and Truma, because those have to be eaten by Tahara. And we'll see this in Machlokes about Bikurim in a second. But the point is, there's lots of other gifts that Kohanim get, and this you can give to any Kohen you want, and here are those gifts. Maybe you didn't know them before. So the first, it says, Ve'elu nitanim L'chol Kohen. These things can be given to any Kohen you want, either a Kohen, even if he's not strict in mitzvah observance, that's the Rav, or only Kohen, even a Kohen that doesn't eat chulin b'tahara, like the Rambam. First of all, hacharamim, nacherim. So what's a cherim? So it's like a whole parsha to itself. A cherim is, there's actually two kinds of charamim. If a person says, harei zu cherim, like I'm making this cherim, in modern, I don't, cherims come to mean like excommunication, but it means like off limits. Cherim means off limits. So if you say, just like you can make something like Harezu Ola, you can make like a Hektesh, Nigri Hektesh, you can give things to the base of Mikdash, we've seen them many times, you know, you're giving your field and all that kind of stuff. So if a person, there's a special thing you can give called a Cherem. So Cherem, there's two versions of a Cherem. One is Cherem to the Mikdash, like in which case it's godly property, it's Bedek Abayis, like and it goes to the base of Mikdash and they sell it, like all the other gifts we've seen. Or you can make a Cherem to a Kohen. You just say, this is Cherem to the Kohen, like I'm giving this to like to the, you know, to the priests, and they can do what they want with it, in which case it now becomes usher to you, you have to give it as a gift, like Hektish, and it becomes personal property of the Kohanim. And they can do what they want with it, whatever they want. They can, if it's edible, they can eat it. If they want to sell it, they can sell it. They can do whatever they want with it, it's their property. It's like a gift, you know, a gift. So that gift can be, it's not edible necessarily even, and that gift can be given to any Kohen. Similarly, Bechoros. A Bechor is your firstborn animal. So firstborn animals in Eretz Yisrael, they have to be given to a Kohen. Actually, born as a korban, okay, and then the meat is eaten by the kohanim. So here you can give the bechor to any kohen you want, and he'll do the offering and eat it. Now this is interesting because you think if the kohen is not strict about mitzvah observance or strict about eating b'tahara, so this is a korban and a korban that can come to be metama. But we say like this: kohanim, they're good guys in general, and forget good guys in the base of mikdash. Like they know you don't mess with korbanos. Like that's serious business. They're going to be careful about it. And certainly in the base of Mikdash and so like this. If it's a Bechor, and you're gonna, if it's a Bechor that's actually not a Balmum, meaning it's eligible for bringing to the Mizbeach as a Korban, an offering, that will be dependent upon it being, in good shape. So then he'll eat it, and he'll know to eat it properly. Even though he eats it, a Bechor is Kachim Kalim, and eaten outside the confines of the base of Mikdash, but like, he knows what to do, and he's going to be careful about it. We trust him. And if it's not going to be eaten in the base of Mikdash, because it can't be brought as a korban, so you can do it, it's a balmum, you can do whatever you want with it, in which case there's no problem with tahara in the first place. You can work it or eat whatever you want with it. It's his. So you can pick your favorite kohen and give it to him, your bechor. Now, upidyon haben, same goes. Now, when you have your firstborn child, if it's a boy and it's the first, what's called like pet erechem, the first issuance of the womb, meaning as opposed to if you had a miscarriage or a cesarean, yada yada, they're quite uncommon. To actually have the opinion events quite uncommon. Rav Yosef Yitzchak Lerner from like the book Shmiras HaNefesh HaGuf, so he once told me that he made a cheshbon, only 1 in 80 births are opinion events. 1 in 80. I think he lived in a Haredi society where he's thinking like every family has 8 kids and 10 kids, but anyway, it's quite uncommon. Quite uncommon.
Well, how many events?
Yeah.
You mean if
it's only a first child, and only
firstborn, male born has to be natural.
Natural birth with no miscarriage before, and you can't have Levi's. Yeah,
okay. Can't be a Levi or Cohen.
Can't have Levi's or Cohen's.
My Fabrice, my when we came to the average, there was religious as well, being about 1 in 40 to 50. But it was religious.
1 in 40 to 50. I guess it depends how many kids per family.
Yeah. So if it is 8 kids, then it would be about 1 in 40.
So this is an uncommon thing. It's good to go to a pitting event. I mean, Baruch Hashem, we did it. My son had a pitting event. Anyways, so the deal is that from the Torah, you redeem that originally before the Chet Egel, before the golden calf, what was supposed to be was that the Kedusha, like the role of the Kohen and role of the serving the people role, was meant to fall on the firstborns. After the Chet Egel, so after the golden calf, so that was moved over to the Levi tribe. But there's still some sort of Hashem, so to speak, like acquired all the firstborns in the killing of the firstborns and saving the firstborns for himself in Egypt. So there's some sort of sanctity embedded into firstborn children like that, and they would have, so to speak, they would be there for the avoda, but it's taken from them. So we redeem that kedusha and we give it to a kohen, and the kohen takes his place. So the Torah mandates 5 shlomim, 5 silver coins. So you have to, and the kohen actually makes money on the deal, right? He's supposed to keep it. Although there is a minhag today, some people have like give the coins and get them back, but you shouldn't do that. Your mom's the coin. You shouldn't do it. You should give it to the coin. Some have another custom of like getting the very coins for like souvenirs, but replacing them with something else. Whatever the deal is, you can choose whatever coin you want to give those 5 coins to. And it's like a
right. You can. Bank of Israel, may son, pigeon of being coin.
That's right.
And I know one coin in Johannesburg would only do it with his, and you had to buy it from him.
Yeah. So some because it's a specific weight and it needs to be real silver. Yeah. Oftentimes, what a coin has, they have like, you know, a stack of 5 coins. And they sort of speak sell to you for that fair price, and you give it to them. Like if you maybe seen a Machs the Shekel, they have a prepackaged 5 coins. Mm-hmm. That's just for convenience, and they don't want to have like they don't have. It's just making sure that it's a technical obligation, so you have to make sure that you give exactly silver coins. Yeah, so they package them like that. Okay, now moving on. We're not this way beyond the scope of this. So you can give it to any coin you want, and also pigeon pet peter chamur, another mitzvah from the Torah. You might have never heard of before. Right, there's a mitzvah that if your donkey has a firstborn issuance of the womb, same story, that donkey has kedusha to it, and you have to redeem it, and you redeem it onto like a seh, either a goat or a sheep, and then you give that goat or a sheep to the kohen. So that's also, you can give that goat or sheep, it's a gift to any kohen you want. Vazro v'lechayam v'keva. Okay, when it comes to your meat, you're supposed to give a gift to the Kohen. Mm-hmm. Now,
chulin.
Yeah, chulin we're talking about. Just regular meat goes to the Kohen. Now, the Zeroa, yeah, your regular fear of the Kohen, you know, this is like, it's been pointed out many times, the first known public taxation in human history is this, the Kohanim. The Kohen are supposed to be basically public servants. They're like, you know, they're sitting, they're supposed to look the rabbis and soul of the community and doing all those other basic English stuff, so they need to be supported. Sorry? It's chulin, it's regular chulin. They can do whatever they want with it, that's right. But so the zeroa is the right foreleg of the animal, like that's the Kohen gift. L'chayayim is the cheeks or the maw, M-A-W, it's like the meat around the jaw here. And the keva is in ruminant animals that chew their cud, which are kosher animals that we eat, so they have 4 stomachs. So the 4th of the stomachs is called the abu masam. No, not to be confused with the Palestinian authorities, right? and that 4th stomach. I mean, I don't know. If, I guess they ate them back then, so that's enjoy. So that goes to Kohen also, the keva. Okay. I don't want to know about it. Okay. So that goes to any Kohen you want. Now also rachis hageiz, you're allowed when you shear your sheep. I don't get the technicalities of it. You need to have at least 5 sheep. They need to be heavily laden with wool. But if you have a lot of wool to go around, you have to give some to the Kohen, the first of the shearing, whatever it is, a de minimis amount, but it goes to the Kohen, some of the wool.
Is that of every sheep?
It's when you shear all your sheep. But there are shiurim. It needs to have 60 slime worth of, 60, it's like technical, 60 slime weight worth of wool, and each of the 5 had to have 12 sell a piece. We'll learn it. It's in Chulin. We'll get to it in Chulin. Anyways, when it's applicable and you shear your sheep and give it, you have to give a gift to the Kohen from the wool shearings. You can give it to any Kohen you want. So really, I don't know. It's beyond the scope of right now.
Does that mean that the first one, assuming you have one?
Yeah, it's like Reishis Geiz Soncha Titenlo. The first shearing of your tzon, of your flock, you should give to him. It's like Bikurim, any amount. Well, once per year, every year they
give.
I believe so. But remember, there's no minimum amounts. Forget the rabbinic stuff. We'll get there. But if you have enough, and then you do. Okay. V'shem and Sreifa, we've seen this before. When you have truma oil that you have to give, your truma oil usually is eaten, it's eaten, right? And that you have to give to a Kohen who's strict about. It's like truma and tchal, and so it's a Kohen who's strict, either strict to even eat chulin b'tahara, or strict to keep mitzvahs properly. Either way, once it's become tame, you've now been matama the oil, now it needs to be burned. Okay, but the Kohen, it's his property, he can burn it, and he can use it for his candles in his house. Like today, you think, well, you can do a lot of burning oil, but I think in a world before light bulbs, like, people burned a lot of oil, that's what you needed. So that is property to the Kohen. He can burn it. He must burn it, actually, right? And that's what's called Shemen Sreifa, oil for burning. But you can, since it's already Tameh, you can give it to any Kohen you want. We're not worried about him anymore. Power. The Kadshei HaMikdash, and really any of the sanctified things from the Beis HaMikdash. There are a million things that are brought in the Beis HaMikdash. There are Menachos, there are Kazvachim, there are whatever, a million different things. Shtei Alechem, all sorts of things brought in the Beis HaMikdash. So leftovers are eaten by the Kohanim. Like usually what happens is you have a whole mincha, it could be enormous, right? And then you take just one little speck of it, a kamita, and you burn that, and the rest gets eaten by the Kohanim. And the animals, the same thing. You have shlam, there's lots of meat floating around. So again, all that stuff you can give to the Kohanim, whether it's kachim, which is not such a big chiddush, because that's eaten in the chatas meat, is kachim eaten inside the Beis HaMikdash. There, of course, like, you know, all eyes are on the Kohen, he's not going to be matam himself, and it's like a protected environment. But even kachim kalim, where they can eat it anywhere in Jerusalem, you can give it to the Kohanim, whoever you want, because like they know what to do, and they're going to be careful about it. They're not going to, you know, certain things that even an Amaretz Kohen just wouldn't do, and that's one of them. Okay? Vabikurim. Bikurim are your first fruits. You have to bring to the Beis HaMikdash. You offer them every year, like something analogous to Reishis Hagez. So Bikurim also you can give to any Kohen you want to, and he sort of, like, they wave it and they can eat it. Okay? Now Rabbi Yehuda Osar Bikurim. Rabbi Yehuda says Bikurim is not allowed. You can't give Bikurim to just any Kohen. There's two reasons given why. The Bar Tanur brings a reason why, that Bikurim aren't actually brought in the Mizbeach. In other words, when it comes to kachim, like, they know, like, this is a part of a korban, so, like, I'm not going to mess with it. But bikurim, it's just fruit you bring to the Beis HaMikdash, it gets waved around, whatever, and they say some nice words on it. But the point is, it's not, like, obviously, you know, holy, it's just some fruit. So the theory is, if you're talking about, remember, we're talking about amaratzim, simple, if, and according to the pshat anyways, like, kohanim, they won't take this stuff so seriously, they'll eat it, and they might be matama it, and you can't be matama the bikurim. So therefore, he says no. Can't give bikurim. I don't, a second, like a non-mutually exclusive shot, is Bikurim are connected, according to Rabbi Yehuda, to Truma. Anyways, like Truma. Just like Truma can't be given, so it can't be Kurim. We've actually seen that before, but anyways. Okay, and the last point here is Karshine Truma. So Kreshin, you'll remember, are this bitter vetch. That's basically animal fodder, but edible by human beings in tough times. So if you have Karshinim that are really animal fodder, but you have to take truma from it, like we saw in Trumos at length. Rabbi Akiva's mater, he says, since anyways people are going to eat it, they're going to give it to their animals. It's animal food. He's lenient. He says, give it even to any Kohen because he won't be matamit and give it to his animals. It's no big deal. The Chacham say, no, it's food also, like we've seen. It needs to take truma taken from it, and therefore even that needs to be given only to proper Kohanim who know how to keep things batar and or do mitzvahs properly. And therefore, and Allah is like the Chacham that you only can give your Karshinim, your animal fodder vetch, to Kohanim that keep things properly. Okay? Eight Mishnayos in one day, right? Okay. So Mishnah Yud says, okay, Mishnah Yud is, and Mishnah Yud and Yud Aleph now are going to be like things you bring from place A to place B. That's the theme of the Mishnayos here. If you remember, challah is only where you knead the dough, that's where is Koveya, where the challah is, and only challah in Eretz Yisrael is chayv in the midst of challah. Dough that you knead outside of Israel is exempt from challah. So the first what if is, what if you need it in Chutz La'aretz, and then you bring it into Eretz Israel? Then there's going to be a lot of these kind of things. So here's how it starts. Nitai, that's the guy's name. A certain guy, Nitai, Ish Tekoa, he's from a place called Tekoa. Tekoa is, I don't know if it's a modern day Tekoa, but it's a place in Eretz Israel. Hevi Chalos, he brought his challah that was given to him, Mebetar. Beitar, I don't know if it's the modern day Beitar, but you see it was also on the wrong side of the line. It was in Chutz La'aretz. So Beitar challahs are exempt, right? They're like, they're Chutz La'aretz. And he brought it into Eretz Israel, and he wanted to eat it over there. V'lo kiblu mimenu, and the rabbi said, no way. No way. Because remember, it's tummy. Eretz Am is tummy. They said, don't bring that stuff in here. And like, he couldn't eat it, and he couldn't give it, and he couldn't take it back. Just had to get buried. That's it. They stopped. They didn't want any imports of challah from Chutz La'aretz because the challah is tamei. And they don't want to confuse anyways. Remember, that challah is all, like, so to speak, like, not real challah. Okay, fine. Remember, the real challah is burned. So, okay, they said no. Similarly, Anshe Alexandria. Alexandria is in Egypt. So that's the south here. Not Israel, of course. Heviu chalosehen from Alexandria. They brought, the men from Alexandria brought their challah in from Alexandria up to Israel. V'lo kiblu mehem, and again the rabbi said, no way, send it back. Okay. Anche har tzavoim. Har tzavoim is Eretz Israel. The Yerushalmi translated as Horah Har, but it's not that, not Arna Cohen's Horah Har. So anyway, it's some other place in Eretz Israel, some other mountain. Heviu bikureim kodum la'atzeres. They brought their bikurim, their first fruits, before Shavuos. Now the din is lechachili. You're supposed to learn that from Pesukim. First, do your shtei alechem, that offering of the two breads, and then afterwards bring the bikurim. And they brought it early, so they said no. They sent it back. Now this is a little technical. Really, b'di'evit, if you brought your bikurim early, you're yolti. They don't have to take it back. The fear was these guys were like important people, and people would like learn the wrong things from them. So they said no. You keep it and bring it back when it's the appropriate time, so people shouldn't learn to do things wrongly. Okay. Oh, I didn't read the whole sentence. I'm sorry. I didn't read the whole sentence probably. It says, Anshe Hart Savom Heviu Bikureim Kodum La'atzeres. They brought their Bikurim before Shavuos proper. Well, Kibul Mehem, and the rabbis didn't accept those Bikurim yet. Mevnei HaKasuv, because the Torah, Shabbatorah, because the verse in the Torah says, V'chag HaKatzir, the holiday of the harvesting, referring to Shavuos, Bikurim Ma'asecha Asher Tizra Besadeh. The first fruits of your actions there that you planted in the field. So they learn out the drasha, the things are planted as the wheat first, that's what's the bikurim, that's the offering of the shtei alechem, that comes first. Limud from Pesukim. Okay, we'll stop with that up there. And then Yudalef continues on. Ben Antinos, that's the guy's name, Hela Bechoros Mebavel. He brought his firstborn animals from Babylonia to Israel as a gift to the Kohanim. Now, we said Bechoros only chayv in Eretz Yisrael. So he wanted to do extra, he wanted to give his gift to the Kohanim. He's some, rich Sephardi guy. He wanted to make, be nice to the rabbis. But the Lokibla Memento, they just rejected that. They took him away. Because they were afraid that people I remember why they didn't accept it.
The Tosfos Yotam brings the Yerushalmi. And Tumura, it says, in both meaning before
you go. Learn. I want to understand why. Okay, yeah, just you're not allowed to. Not necessary. Okay, fine. Yosef HaKohen, Joseph the priest, Hevi Bikure Yain Veshemin. He brought Bikurim in the form of Yain, that's wine, and Shemin, that's oil, as opposed to in the form of grapes and olives. They didn't accept that from him. Now, if you do recall, I'm impressed. In the 11th parak of Trumos, we learned that you could taka bring. It says you can't bring fruit. Fruit must be brought as fruit as bikurim, with the exception of oil and wine. So really, the Mishnah said you could bring oil and wine. So what's the problem here? The Yerushalmi picks up on it and says the issue is that he originally packed, his bags to bring to Eretz Yisrael, to bring to the Beis Hamikdash with the olives and the grapes whole. And then he changed his mind and said, I'll squeeze him, so that's too late. Once you've dedicated the whole fruit, you have to bring this whole fruit. But if you're going to press it first, the Kohen are only too happy to get, post-processed, grapes and olives, so you could bring it. But since these guys changed their mind midway, too late, you can't do that anymore, they didn't accept it. Afhu he'ela es banav ves b'nei beis ala asos pesach katan b'yushalayim. So the same guy, good old Joseph the Kohen, Yosef the Kohen, he also brought his kids, banav ubnei beiso, that's the rest of his household, his wife and the attendants, I guess, to do Pesach Sheni in Yerushalayim. So Pesach Sheni, you recall, is if you can't, on Pesach proper, you can't bring a korban because you're tamei, you're too far, so then you have to bring it on Pesach Sheni. Here's the thing though. Pesach Sheni is only a chiyuv on the man and maybe his wife, but certainly not his children that are not bar mitzvah yet. No way. Now, so it's optional. So they can bring it, that's gezunt hei tzem, they can bring it. The thing is like this though. If you're only optionally allowed to bring it, so if Pesach Sheni falls out on the Shabbos, it'll be, so then the Torah says, like all the mitzvahs we said, it says do it today, so you do it today despite Shabbos being there. You'll do Shechit and so on. But you certainly can't do things for people who aren't chayev on Shabbos. So when it comes to Pesach Rishon, everyone comes along and everyone can do it, even if it's on Shabbos, not a problem. Pesach Sheni, either the issue is the wife or the children, it's a machlokas, never before here, what the issue is. But in any case, this guy Yosef Akon was an important person. People think, oh, this is the din, you have to bring your wife or you have to bring your kids to do Pesach Sheni also, like normal Pesach. And then what will happen is, next year Pesach Sheni will fall out on the Shabbos, everyone will be from and bring their kids along or their wife along to bring a korban, and the kids will be doing malacha, or the wife will be doing malacha, and that's forbidden. Can't do it for them. And therefore, they said, no, send him back home, we don't want anyone to get confused. He was an prominent person. Their fear was that the matter shouldn't be established as an obligation. That was their fear, that everyone should follow his lead. Now, finally, Ariston, a Jew, I guess, but you see, he was not very Jewish. He had a nice Greek name.
They mentioned Ben Ariston earlier.
Sorry?
Ben Ariston was mentioned a little
earlier. Ben Ariston, that's right, yeah. I wonder if it's the same person.
Oh, no,
Ben is Ben Antinos.
Okay.
No, but it's like this, it's obviously a similar name. Okay, these are those days. So this guy Ariston, Havi Bikurav Me'apamia. Apamia is a city in Syria. Remember Syria from yesterday? That's not Eretz Yisrael proper, but it's Midrabban Eretz Yisrael. So he brought his Bikurim from there. And the Kiblu Menu, they accepted those because really we treat that like Midrabban as if it's Eretz Yisrael. But Neish Amru, as the rabbi said, Hakona Besuria, remember there's machlokas if a Jew or non-Jew owned it, but if a Jew is Kona Besuria, a Jew acquires land in Syria, like the Golan Heights today, whatever it is, or southern Syria, whatever it is. So, Kakona Befarvad Shebi Yerushalayim. It's as if he bought, the rabbi said, it's as if he bought on the outskirts of Jerusalem. Meaning it's like, we treat it as bona fide Israel completely, in every way. So, that's the case here. He correctly brought his like outskirts?
Suburb,
yeah. Yeah. Okay, so the point is it's he brought it and they accepted it because that was the right thing to do. Okay, with that, Salak Maseches Challah. Baruch Hashem. We did it. Mazel Tov. Okay, we're not stopping. We're going to pass on the cookies. Keep on going. We have more of those. Okay, you ready? Okay. That was important. Mazel Tov. I think so, no. They just have the weight of silver. It's weight of silver.
Mr.
Lewis, what you don't realize why it's frantic is that we have to finish in 2 weeks for this. They're having a big party in our honor, but we're behind schedule and making the completion. So it's usually quite a laid back, I like to think it's a laid back environment, and now we're tremendously pressurized to get done this enormous amount of work. Okay. Oh, I should stop this.